Statements expressed in the following program do not necessarily reflect those of WWDB, its staff, or management.
Welcome to Tone and Tenor, a show that explores current issues of the day and listens to bipartisan voices of the people. We want to hear from you with your phone calls and on social media. Now, here are the hosts of Tone and Tenor.
Welcome to the Tone and Tenor Show, Bipartisan Voices of the People. I'm Randall Jefferson.
I'm Maurice Goodman.
Our show looks at major issues impacting the nation and region from a bipartisan perspective. We want to hear from you, our listeners. Call, ask questions of our guests. Our call-in number is 1-888-329-3306. That's 1-888-329-3306. Our phone lines are now open. You can also send us your comments via social media. Our Twitter handle is @ToneAndTenor. You can also like us on our Facebook page. Just type in the words Tone and Tenor in the Facebook search engine to find us. Our topic today is political roller coasters, local, regional, and national. Maurice, we are on a roller coaster this week. whether we go down the road a few miles to Washington, D.C., go across the water to New Jersey, or right here in the birthplace of our nation, Philadelphia. The politics are going up and down and all around, just like a roller coaster.
It's amazing to watch. I mean, you could go from citywide addressing of sexual abuse, the whole program that has to be addressed here in the city, which was a big issue during the course of the week, and allegations that were laid out, but based on some really concrete facts and money cut,
right,
deals cut, to the President of the United States at a news conference that looked a lot like, to some people, the President of the United States siding with the President of Russia versus his own intelligence agency about the meddling of the 2016 election and everything that happened in between. And even, I mean, boy, what a week.
And not just happening in between, but just happening and breaking and coming on just before we come on, where their instruction has been given by the President, President Donald J. Trump, to begin the process of having Russian President Vladimir Putin to come to the nation's capital.
Right, sometime in what, the late summer, early fall.
Yes.
And his intelligence chief, or one of his intelligence leaders, his director of intelligence, being told about it while he's at the Aspen Summit, which is apparently it's a big think conference out in Aspen, Colorado, where everybody gets together and they have big talk and conversation. I'm sure many of you in the audience saw it or heard about it. And there's the reporter from NBC News and Andrea Mitchell talking to Dan Coats.
That's,
I think,
right,
it was Dan Coats,
was
and
Dan
saying
Coats.
That we're going to that the president just announced he's gonna have Putin over for a fall meeting, and he goes, "Wow, that's news to me."
Yeah, and almost falls out of his seat,
Chair,
laughing, and says, "Say that again." And you know, these are supposed to be the people that our leadership advises our leadership.
Right.
You know, and just think about it; it's almost similar to what happened with the Made in America in Philadelphia, you know, where Live Nation finds out through a news conference, through a newspaper, or, you know, no direct, from what we understand, you know, no direct contact from the powers that be in the city. And now everybody, just like with the nation, they're backpedaling and trying to do damage control.
Right. So if you're not dizzy by now, this was a roller coaster week.
And that's just Philadelphia. And we haven't even really got into it with what's going on in the nation and around this country.
Right.
You know, it's, you know, we can look at Mr. Cohen, and who was supposed to be the president's right-hand man and lawyer. And now they're saying, according to the New York Times, that he wore a wire.
So just to start us off, right? So we gave
you
an overview of the roller coaster of the week. We'll start there. So sometime, yesterday, Mr. Cohen, who's Trump's lawyer, who was the fellow who was representing Mr. Trump over Stormy Daniels, who was the porn star who had the relationship with Mr. Trump, we now learn recorded discussing the payment of Stormy Daniels with President Trump, which in and of itself is a bombshell, because then it begins to make you wonder, makes you wonder about what else might he have taped.
Well, this recording was seized during that FBI raid of his office.
Interesting.
You know, and it basically says, according to the Times, it says Michael D. Cohen secretly recorded a conversation with Mr. Trump 2 months before the presidential election, mm-hmm. in which they discussed payments to a former Playboy model who said she had an affair with Mr. Trump, according to lawyers and other familiar, those familiar with the recording. Mm. You know, so will there be another national spin? Because, you know, every time something gets hot on our leadership, whether Democrat or Republican, now it seems like it becomes a media spin and something else surfaces.
Right, continually.
Right.
So the question then becomes, I mean, this is just one of the many, as you just know, one of many topics. So with this Cohen situation, it begs a lot of questions. It's like, well, okay, if you recorded this, what else did you record, to Randall's point? You now have the president. If true, if we then see the hear and, you know, hear the transcripts or get the transcripts of the recordings, you'll actually have an individual who eventually becomes president of the United States having his lawyer pay off someone who had an affair with him who was not his wife, which is pretty interesting. And there's going to be no place for the president or the White House spin machine, no place for them to go. But then as soon as you try to figure that out, you're then going to have the further questions of, well, okay, what else did he tape? I mean, there's a reason why I guess he got Lanny Davis, which has been a who's been a guest on our show. There's a reason why he's had Lanny Davis represent him. There could be other things out there that's sitting out in the water waiting to come to shore. And if this is one of them, this is an immediate bombshell. And if there's something bigger than that, that could be very problematic. And following this, and this is following the indictments from Robert Mueller with the Russian intelligence agents right coming in. That was a thing. President,
and that happened, you know, the same day of President Donald Trump and Vladimir Putin meeting,
right,
in Helsinki.
Right.
You know, so several, as you know, Senator Harris and Senator Casey both stated to us and to other media that they were against the meeting being held after that indictment.
Right.
Of those 12.
Right. So, and it's partly, but in Randall, I mean, it's, you know, we're not trying to have some sort of gossip, rumor mongering thing here, but you got to start asking questions. You got, one of which is, well, one, you had
ask the intelligent questions.
Right. Okay, you had the you had the indictments.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, shouldn't we be gripping these guys and sending them on their merry way? Shouldn't we be cutting a deal with Putin to have anything to do with that? Just go ahead and indict them and then put them through a court of law and then get them going. Okay, fine. The Democrats didn't want the president to meet with them. The president does meet with Putin, but the president met with Putin privately, with no one else in the room except the interpreters. Throw in what we get today with Cohen and these recorded tapes. What's one begins to wonder, there's a lot of smoke. Why would you go into a room with your adversary with no one around to really give you a historical record of what's happening, to talk to him without there being something of concern to the American people that your president would be sitting in there and doing that? Follow that up with now what's come down today, where now your lawyer, your personal lawyer, has these recordings. Why would he feel the need to record his conversation with his client to then eventually use? Maybe I'm just stretching it a bit, but there seems to be some pattern here.
You know, in Mr. Cohen's possible defense, you know, maybe he felt as though, you know, he was going to do the recording first, and then he was going to extrapolate the information and put it down on paper, almost like being a court stenographer. You know, and I'm not saying that's what he did or was doing or wasn't going to do, but it's very interesting that through all the denials, this surfaces through the FBI raid of his office.
Right. Which then begs the question, what does the Mueller investigation really know? There's so much drip, 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 drip going on out there now. It's feeling a bit like a rainstorm. And there seems to be a bit of a tactical – there's tactics behind the strategy that's getting you this information. One begins to worry now about what that is. And so if they have – think about it for a second. If they have your personal lawyer is taping you, then you become president, and you have these meetings with an adversary that you seem very chummy with. And then you have meetings with that adversary, private meetings. Then you want another one with him. No real substance of policy, international policy, comes down the pike. But yet you're defending that individual. You begin to start cobbling together a series of questions of what is this? Why is this? What comes of it? What's Mueller following? And so that's a concern. And you know, that's not an anti-Trump statement or trying to defend the president. It's problematic, right? It becomes problematic in the whole. And that's the thing that that this administration has to be careful of. All the while they're trying to work with Congress to get certain things done, like infrastructure, right? Mm-hmm. Like a continuation of the tax cut that they did in December where you brought – the corporate rates from 35% to 21%, and you made a big shift. So you had one or two victories. But in the midst of those victories, you have all these things in the middle. Never mind what the president did with NATO and with the EU and then with the G7 summits, where he attacks all of his friends, every one of them.
Well, all of this country's allies.
Allies, that's right. Better known as friends, right. Also, right?
Right.
And so starting with Canada and working your way on in, and you begin to wonder what where is he going? Where is this president going with all of this? And what's really happening? What does Mueller really know? Are we going to have problems in the next few months? Will we get things done? You know, in the country, infrastructure is a big question that people are asking day in and day out. When is there going to be an infrastructure deal? Will we even have time for one because we're so busy, you know, ferreting through all this stuff?
Well, we also remember our friends in Puerto Rico who are still without electricity.
Right.
Infrastructure. You brought up infrastructure. They are still without roads in some areas. They are still without good, clean drinking water. You know, are we still our friends in Flint, Michigan? Infrastructure, good, clean drinking water, still in Michigan.
Right.
You know, there's a lot of spin going on, but nothing is really being accomplished right now.
Right. I mean, it took the Transportation Secretary, Ms. Elaine Chao, to be at another one of those talk sessions to assure the American people that there will be infrastructure debate, discussion, and then legislation before the year is out. It's boggles the mind that you've had what, two infrastructure weeks announced by the president in 1 year. Mm-hmm. And during those announcements of infrastructure week, it would debilitate into something else other than infrastructure. Now you have the transportation secretary assuring you that there'll be something. And, you know, we keep getting sidetracked, and something that important that could have so much impact in different states in the country is kind of mind-boggling.
Right. But, you know, what really is mind-boggling too, Maurice, is that our state leadership and our local leadership have now been drawn into this. And instead of them looking and fighting for what needs to be done for infrastructure, what needs to be done for their particular state, everyone's on attack mode. You know, you did this, you did that. Even on the social media news, I call them the social media news giants, you know. It's oh, now you know what your president's about. Now you know what this, you know, instead of attacking and going back and forth, people come together and join together to get to the solution. Remember, you know, I keep saying this, and I think folks forget, there's three branches of government.
Hmm.
The executive branch, legislative branch, and judicial branch. Hmm. And because the executive branch may or may not be in turmoil, depending on who you're talking to,
hmm.
it's affecting the legislative branch. And then it's trickling down to the regions, which are the states. Then that trickles down, especially if they are run similar to that of the national government right now,
right.
Predominantly Republican in both of their houses. That's causing problems because it seems like the little kids in the sandbox again. You know, because you're a Democrat, because you're a Republican, I'm not going to play in the sandbox. I'm not going to shake your hand across the aisle, you know, or vice versa. So we have to, you know, folks keep forgetting, and we have to keep remembering that this is nothing new. The attack on the Republican administration is the same thing that happened during the Democratic administration.
Mm.
You know, I'm not going to, because the Democrats have the whole majority, we're going to sit on the sidelines and we're going to hold out and not vote for this particular, even though they're going to push it through. But they had to convince. You know, we have to always remember that when we wanted the Affordable Health Care Act to come through, they convinced then Senator Arlen Specter, late Senator Arlen Specter, who was a Republican, to cross party lines, change to the Democratic side, and to make that vote.
Hmm.
You know, that's, you know, arguably some say it wasn't his vote, but at the end of the day, you had that extra vote.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so we have to realize that you have to begin to see that if we turn the tables into a Democratic-led, will this happen again? You know, somewhere along the line, Maurice, and I keep saying this, and we say this day in and day out, our elected officials have to become servants of the people that they serve and stop this petty becking and fighting back and forth, name calling and all of that, and start to get the business of the people done. Because at the end of the day, we're sitting here in Philadelphia, which is, some folks will say, a booming city, but we still, as we talked and said last week and over again, we still have one of the largest poverty rates in the nation, number one. And it's not being addressed. These things have to be addressed. Homelessness has to be addressed. Real jobs have to be addressed.
Well, so what does that lead us to? So we know that midterm elections are coming up this November, right? So we know this. And people are concerned. Everything you just laid out. Oh, by the way, just as an aside, of the bickering and the back and forth, a lot of people in Pennsylvania missed is that the Pennsylvania state budget was passed on time, $32.7 billion.
First time in 10 years, I believe it was.
Just a side item.
Yeah, first time in 10 years.
That was pretty amazing.
Ahead of time.
So we got to give them credit.
And signed on time.
Right. Got to give them credit on that. So that just wanted to throw that in there before we went to the other side of it. With the midterms, there was a poll recently, and Vox.com gave a pretty fair article on this. It said only 28% of young voters, meaning you millennials out there, say that they'll certainly vote in the 2000 midterm elections, saying that millennials are pretty reliable Democrats but unreliable voters. So what does that mean? It means that there is a certain number of people out there that are going to vote, and then there's a certain number of people that are not going to vote. I had a conversation with a friend of mine the other day, and they were very apoplectic about all the things that are going on, depending on what side of the aisle you're on. Very upset. Okay. My question to them was, but what are you going to do? Who are you going to tell to do the things that you should be doing, like being informed and then go to vote? Because if you don't like what's going on, the midterms is your opportunity to have your voice heard. And if only a certain number of people, you know, between ages of 18 and 34 or 35 and older are going to vote, and not let's say 50% and higher in the general population, to be it a city or a state or a nation, if it's not a 50% or higher number of folks actively going out to vote, then you're going to probably be highly upset with your result, and you're still going to complain.
Well, let's really think about this. And again, you know, you had Senator Harris from California in town last Friday in Philadelphia, along with Senator Bob Casey. And in the middle of the summer, or we're in the middle of the summer, they are organizing. Something almost unheard of in this area, to begin organizing and trying to do the GOTV, getting people more or less trying to get them energized to go out to vote, to get people, you know, registered. And this is one thing, Maurice, and it's a sidestep to what I'm trying to get to. But it's one thing to get people registered. You can register all the new voters you want, all the old voters, get them back on the rolls. But if you don't have a way to get them energized and have them go out to the polls to vote, then all those efforts that you did to get these folks registered was for null.
Right.
Regardless of whether you're Republican or Democrat.
Right.
You know, and this is what, you know, this is what strategists now bank on. You know, especially the minorities, they will always say, well, you don't have to worry about that community, because especially if it rains, you know, you could rely on the elderly to go vote because of the history of what had to happen for folks to get folks that look like us to vote.
Right. So here's the kicker. The kicker, to your point, is that, you know, you got to get them out. All right. So it seems right now, and in the past couple of weeks, there's been this movement, something called a blue wave, where Democrats are energized to vote. The young are energized to vote. They are likely to vote. They're ready to go. The question is, has the party, and the party will tell you this, the party is going, we haven't done a good enough job, Democrats, that is, of reaching those voters in spaces to discuss the issues that get them most to vote. Right now, that energy is all anti-Trump, right? It's against something, not something that the Democrats have given them to vote for, right? And that seems to be an issue that Democrats have to kind of work out before they can make this blue wave a real thing and take over, let's say, the House.
But if we go back years ago, you know, when some of our folks decided to vote or went to the polls, there was something called true platforms. You knew what the folks were going, what they stood for. You knew what the platform was going to be. And you basically voted for who you liked based on what their platforms. But if you start looking and listening to today's platforms, they're the same. If you listen to them on either side of the aisle, they are similar. But then when they get into office, you know, it doesn't happen.
Sure.
And you know, one of the questions that we always pose to some of those elected officials is those that are seeking to be elected, what will you do? You know, then we start hearing past folks we had, well, you know, it's going to, I plan on being here 10 years because, you know, I'm going to go in as this and I'm going to be able to do this. But you're telling your constituency, you're feeding them a crock of stuff when you go out there, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that, you and I both know you're not going to do that unless you've been there.
Yeah, there's an accountability piece, right? So you get in, then you feel comfortable. Then you feel safe because you're in a district that's more or less either gerrymandered to your advantage or is demographically set to your advantage. The trick now in this day and age is that a lot of people are paying attention now. A lot of folks are beginning to watch the issues and watch the people that are leading them. Are they going to follow through? Because, again, it keeps coming back to people have needs. We've gone 10 years since the economic downturn of 2008. We're 10 years downrange, if you can believe that. And we're coming out of it. The economy is better as a whole, but if you got it to a granular space, people are still struggling. So when a politician now running for office comes in, even though the voters may not be saying this to you, when they go into that poll, they are really, really going to be watching you to see if you actually put meat to the bone mm-hmm. of your campaign position. And right now, that pressure's on Democrats right now, because Republicans are in their own internal catfight right now. They're in a big catfight. They're in a battle for the soul of the Republican Party. There are the Trumpsters and the never Trumpsters, right? And then there's the traditional Republicans, maybe the Northeast Republicans. There is any number of factions that are all over each other. In the state of Pennsylvania, you've got the apparatus Republicans, the folks who make the trains run on time mm-hmm. all day, and then you've got the donor Republicans. They are in an internecine dogfight right now for the soul of the Pennsylvania Republican Party, per se. And they are now in a position to lose stuff, lose position. But at the same time, Democrats have nothing for their voters to vote for. Nothing to vote for, no meat on the bone to vote for. So it puts the voter in this conundrum of, well, one, maybe my vote doesn't even count because it seems like I have this thing out here. But there needs to be this conversation. Both parties have to have a conversation. One has to have a conversation with itself, the Republicans. The other one has to have a conversation with his constituency who feel like they have been taken for granted.
But I think also the constituency and the, especially those that are Democrat, have to have conversation amongst themselves and have true conversations that are not attack conversations. Because, you know, I think Hillary Clinton said it best to Black Lives Matter when she was campaigning. You can jump up and down and you can do all of this, but at the end of the day, what's your agenda and what do you want? So until that comes to fruition, you know, all of the yelling and screaming and all of that, I will guarantee that you will hear folks saying, "I'm voting because I'm a Democrat." You know, "I'm voting because the Democrats love me, Democrat." But at the end of the day, you will see, and same with Republicans, you know, at the end of the day, you have to ask yourself, "What have you done for me lately?" Mm-hmm. Isn't that a song?
Yes. Janet did it very well.
Right.
She did.
So on that note, we're going to take a break. You're listening to Tone and Tenor here on WWDB Talk 860 AM. Our topic today is political roller coasters, local, regional, and national.
The Tone and Tenor Show is sponsored by Factotum Business and Government Solutions, a unique lobby consulting company that services business and governmental clients through long-standing bipartisan relationships. It is Factotum's mission to provide business solutions for both profit and nonprofit organizations, connecting them to officials in local, state, and federal governments. Factotum has offices in Pennsylvania and Washington, D.C. For more information on Factotum Business and Government Solutions, call 866-795-4484. That's 866-795-4484.
Welcome back to Tone and Tenor here on WWDB Talk 860 out of Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. I'm your host, Randall Jefferson, along with our other host, Mr. Maurice Goodman. Our topic today is political roller coasters, local, regional, and national. And we're actually diving into this as the host today without a guest, and, you know, and we're using our knowledge and
or lack thereof.
and actually, the folks we have spoken to, you know, remember this is July. A lot of folks are on vacation. But we, throughout the week, continue to get insight from the power brokers and the folks that make, allegedly or supposed to make, those conscientious decisions that drive our nation, our region, and our municipality. And, you know, so we don't have any newspapers in front of us, and we're not reading any newspapers. We're talking from where we've been and folks we have spoken to throughout the week. And, you know, and it's just really, I've never seen such a roller coaster ride, Maurice, regardless of where you turn and the mishaps that are happening from those that are supposed to be political directors, those that are supposed to be political pundits that are making missteps and misguiding folks and making this news. It's almost like a political comedy show sometimes.
Yeah.
You know, and folks from around the world are watching what this country is doing, watching our leadership. And when our leadership gets on TV and start talking about, well, what would you do when you were talking to your wife at night and all of this stuff.
That was a low point, wasn't it, in Congress?
These are our national leaders. What difference does it make?
That's the congressional scenario.
Get information and get to the root of the problems. And, you know, somewhere along the line, our elected officials have to begin to, again, to act like some of them, like adults, and remember who's hurting out there and who put them there. And you can't complain if you don't vote. And I'm going to keep saying that until we get to November. You know, if you don't go out and vote, or if you're not registered to vote and then go to the polls and vote, then you have no voice.
And with that, ladies and gentlemen, you know, you all live in different districts, counties, states, municipalities. We are asking you to do us a favor. Do us a small favor. Tell your elected officials or those who are running that you'd like them to come onto the show. Have them send them onto the show. We will be reaching out to certain current elected officials and candidates in the weeks ahead to have them on the show into the run-up to the midterm elections as best we can.
Right.
As best we can, to have them on the show to state their positions, state what solutions they're looking to bring to the table, be it a state rep to potentially city council candidates that are going into the 2019 election, let's say in Philadelphia, which, by the way, is probably going to be a Donnybrook. It's going to be something to behold. You really should get your popcorn now. Order your popcorn now so that you can sit and watch the 2019 run for city council in Philadelphia. That's going to be something to watch. But what we're really getting at is we want, and those elected officials who are now listening and candidates now listen, start calling us and setting up appointments with us to have you on the show, because we really need you on. Our listeners really want you to tell them where they're going, where you're going, your positions are, what you're going to do different from your opponent. Will there be meat on the bones of your campaign promises, so that our listeners can get the best informed decisions they can have, and then either vote for you or not vote for you, vote you in and be new at the game, or vote you out.
You know, there are some elected officials that are actually leaving office, and I remember them saying, if you don't like what I'm doing, fire me. And someone asked them, well, how do I fire? They say, vote me out. But they know that most people, if a person has been in office for quite a number of years, that person is going to stay there. So that's another piece of lip service that our elected officials, some of them, give. You know, I'm not trying to group everybody into one group, but that's why I backed up and said some of them. And you have to do this. You know, when you look at these scenarios, Maurice, and you look at what's going on in our municipalities, and you said something that's interesting, and to lead up to what the 2019, look, the RNC has already announced where their 2020 convention will be, and that will be in Charlotte. You know, will the Democratic convention be announced soon?
Mm.
You know, because the Republicans have now announced theirs, or will they sit back and wait and see what goes on. But I hope that they learned from their last convention that you cannot have a starstruck celebrity show, a big party, and think you've already won. You know, and because look what happened, you know, for them.
Right.
On the other hand, the Republicans, they had their own problems. We were there in Cleveland where this one didn't want to be there. That one didn't want to be there. But at the end of the day, the Republican Party controls the House, the Senate, and the executive branch as of right now.
That's right. So now the Republicans are coming to Charlotte for the 2020. The Democrats were there in 2012 for the reelect of President Obama. So that'll be interesting to watch. What I'm still trying to get my head around, Randall, is who is going to – because it sounds like someone is going to challenge Trump. Sounds like. Well, but we don't know who is going to challenge Trump.
Representative Flake. There's a few names being thrown out there.
Flake, maybe, Flake, in Arizona?
Yeah, he's been thrown out there several times.
Hmm.
You know, you never know whether – those that have stepped down and said that they're not going to run.
So let's name it. Paul Ryan.
Paul Ryan.
Speaker of the House. Is that what you're trying to say?
Could be a no. Could be one. Corker could be one.
Corker out of Tennessee.
Yeah. You know, it could be any of those guys that have left or say they were burnt out or don't want. It could even be Rand Paul.
Hmm. Who now seems to be a Trump supporter. Yeah, I mean, he was bomb-throwing at the beginning of the year, and now suddenly he's traveling to Russia and he's defending the president in some of these scenarios. That's an interesting move. That's just a side item that I noticed this week.
And most people, not just you, a lot of folks have noticed that. But remember, Rand Paul has been in this game.
Hmm.
You know, politics is a game for a while. So sometimes he could be, and we don't know this for sure, if you can't beat him right now, let's join him, and then I can continue to do what I need to do behind the scenes.
Do you know another one that came up, another name that came up? National Review did a pretty good article on him a couple of weeks ago and talked about him as potentially a player in the presidential sweepstakes. Tim Scott, Senator Tim Scott of South Carolina, for whatever reason, there's movement around his name as a great what's the phrase I'm looking for? Healer of the party. If we are saying that there's this squabble of institutional Republicans versus movement Republicans versus traditional Republicans, there is no galvanizing figure in the party. And the article in the National Review kind of touched on how he could potentially be that candidate. I found that to be very interesting. As he always has played in the background, has come into the foreground, discussed issues very much like Paul Ryan about what happens in the inner cities and rural areas, how people should be brought, should be afforded economic opportunity to rise. So that's another name out there that one might want to keep an eye on as a potential candidate for president. Never mind that, in Pennsylvania, folks have always had this thing about Senator Pat Toomey doing something. But he's about to become the Senate chair of the banking committee, so I don't imagine he would want to step away from that and run for president, but you never know. So that's that side. On the Democratic side, okay, we seem like we have a roster, right? Senator Kamala Harris. Mm-hmm.
From
California. You've got Bernie Sanders probably going again. Elizabeth Warren out of Massachusetts looks like she's going to make a move. Looks like maybe Cory Booker is trying to make a move. So Kamala Harris and Cory Booker in the Senate Judiciary Committee, right? Mm-hmm. They're on that committee.
Right.
So they're in a place to make some noise. Who else? I think that's about the size of that roster. Oh, Kirsten Gillibrand out of New York. Who might be a dark horse. I mean, she comes from a political family, been there, done that for a bit, came out of nowhere, quote unquote, but when Senator Clinton left her seat to go on to become Secretary of State, Gillibrand took her space and has done good work.
And she had the backing of then Congressman Rangel and Cruz and a lot of folks up there in New York during that time. And, you know, when you look at those, that New York's an interesting place to be a senator or a congressman in. So that's interesting. You have Schumer.
No.
You know, sometimes we forget about Uncle Charlie.
We call him Uncle Charlie now?
Well, you know, Senator Schumer.
He's a relative. What?
You know, Senator Schumer. I as a minority leader, and Congresswoman Pelosi, as leaders, minority leaders, that, you know, they, yes, it's their job to strike down some of the things that are being said, but I think as minority leaders, you also should come to the floor with, okay, we don't like this, but here's our solution. Mm. Drop that paper. You know, it's almost like drop the mic.
Right.
Drop it down and say, look, here it is. This is what we have. Then you go in and you do that compromise. That's the problem today, Maurice, is that what used to be known as the ante room is no longer there in Washington. Mm. There's no one there to lock that door and say, we're not going out until we get X, Y, Z done and we have an agreement between both sides of the aisle.
Well, you know, some of these...
On major issues. Now, I have
enough
to clarify.
Sure.
On major issues.
Sure.
They have been able to get small things pushed through and on a unanimous decision most. But if you look at just what happened with the president's nomination for Supreme Court.
Mm-hmm. Kavanaugh.
It's 11-10. Went straight down party lines and now we'll move out of committee.
But you know something? I'll tell you something, Randall, and I'm going to just go in on this one. I think there's a lot of people out there, many, you know, people out there are looking at the Democratic Party and they're going, gee, they're old and they're out of touch. And they are, I think there is something going on. I mean, just look at that race between Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez beating Joseph Crowley in that New York congressional race, that congressional primary. She's a 28-year-old community organizer, came out of nowhere, beats a guy who was in line potentially to being the Speaker of the House should that quote-unquote blue wave had washed over the House in the coming midterms. He would have potentially been the Speaker of the House. A gentleman, you know, hey, look, I'm old, so I can say old guy because I'm old. So he was at a certain age. She's 28. I think there is a generational movement afoot, both parties, but definitely in the Democratic Party. They're saying, okay, you guys have done your part. You know, Speaker Pelosi, at the time she was Speaker, made history and got through Obamacare. So no one's going to be able to take that away from her. Now that she's the minority leader, I think there's a large push being set up to push a younger generation forward so they can challenge Republicans more aggressively. But again, it comes back to what will they be doing? What will Democrats, young and older Democrats, be voting for when people like Ocasio-Cortez come up and potentially win and potentially take seats and potentially take leadership if the blue wave comes in and moves Republicans out? What are they going to be voting for? What are they going to be pushing forward? On the Republican side, millennials are not as involved. It's still an older party. It's still an older party, and the millennials are beginning to take some leadership, not all. There is a mezzanine, folks in their 40s and their 50s. You think of a David Urban and a couple of other folks who've made big moves inside the party to make things, you know, to get folks to get out to vote. They've been very effective. They've got money. They've got a machine. But again, it's a Trump, anti-Trump thing.
Well, Maurice, you know, you brought up something very interesting, and I just Googled it real quick to get the stats on it, you know, and this is from the Quorum. It says, today the average American is 20 years younger than that of their representative in Congress.
20 years younger.
20 years younger. This should come as no surprise, considering that over the past 30 years, the average age of a member of Congress has increased with almost every new Congress. In 1981, the average age of a representative was 49, and the average age of a senator was 53. Today, and we're talking about the 115th
Congress. Okay.
Today, the average age of a representative is 57.
Right.
And the average age of a senator is 61.
All right, so there you have it.
So based on what you just said, there is some
right
difference there.
Right. And I think there's a groundswell of younger voters and just younger people in general going, well, okay, so my mom and my dad and maybe my grandfather are running my country. They have no working clue of what I'm trying to do. I'm not trying to foment generational divide here. What I'm saying is there's a conversation that can be had between the younger generation and the older generation. But right now that leadership in Congress is not speaking to the wider audience, which is bigger than them. If the millennial population is 82 million people in the U.S., of a population of 320 million, if it's 82 million, that's the biggest cohort of a generation. They're the largest ones. One would wonder, do they get the keys to the car and get to run the country now? And if they do, are the older generation going to hand them the keys or going to take the keys away from their parents and grandparents?
Well, Maurice, to take it even a little bit further, the average age of the Democratic House leadership is 72
years old.
Whereas the average age of the Republican House leadership
is
48 years
old.
How about it? The trend continues in the House committee leadership, with Republican chairmen averaging 59 years old and ranking Democrats averaging 68 years old.
Right.
So when our young people start talking about our elected officials being out of touch,
maybe onto something.
They may be onto something.
And here's the kicker. The older generation need not feel threatened by the younger generation. You just find ways to bring them to the table. Slowly but surely. Or, like in the case of Ocasio-Cortez, they just bounce you out of the position and then they take over, but without having any institutional memory of how the thing works or how the thing is ran. So it sounds like at some point the Democratic Party may have to have a very deep conversation about their generation gap.
Well, you know, I know we weren't, this wasn't how we were supposed to
but
go.
But this is part of the roller coaster, though.
Let's look at this. Representative Connors from Michigan, he's 87 years old, but his average median age of a constituency is 35.
Right.
If we keep going down, Representative Young from Republican from Arkansas, 83, average age of constituency, 33. Representative Serrano, 73, average age, 30.
Right.
So when you look at it, that's 40 years. One is over 50 years. Two over 50 years.
Right.
So.
Right. So it still speaks to the roller coaster, and here's how. So all week you've seen Trump do what he's done and go in the direction he's gone. You've seen Republicans finally beginning to move across budgets of the 12 spending bills they got to get through. They've gotten through a good number of them. All Democrats have been able to do is just kind of parry and play defense and be anti-Trump, anti-Congress, this sort of thing without any kind of solutions. A whole generation of Americans out there not only have solutions, but because they were challenged by the 2008 economic crisis, might have come up with certain solutions that can be functional not only in business and in education and other areas of our economy, but also in Congress. So the great challenge right now of both parties, I mean, think about it for a second. President Trump is 72 years old, 72, oldest president we've ever had. And so my sense is that, hey, young people, this is your moment. This is your moment. You must step up. If you're having a problem with your leadership, don't just kick them out. Have big conversations with them. If they're not paying attention to you, very much like Joe Crowley was not paying attention to his constituents, someone young came in and said, okay, we're done, and move him on.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully, the older generation will start bringing folks in, because all you'll get is what you got this week. Just, no, Mr. Trump, you should not be going to meet Vladimir Putin, as opposed to, here's going to be the solution that comes up behind what you did. We're going to cut a deal behind you because we're going to make sure that the Russians will not ever do what they did again. A younger generation may have a really smart way to get around that, the way to fight that issue and have outmaneuvered Republicans in that conversation of this week. So still a part of the roller coaster.
Mm. Yeah, you know, that was real interesting. And when you really look at it, what our elected officials are scared of. They are, a lot of them are scared of these young people coming in, taking away their cushy, creamy job and as an elected official and making moves, making noise, you know, upsetting the apple cart.
Right.
You know, I mean, when we say upsetting the apple cart, it's not that they're doing it negatively as what's going on with this roller coaster, but actually upsetting it where there will be things done. And we have to take this all the way back, Maurice, to the signing of the Declaration of Independence and to the Constitution. You know, those older gentlemen, when they did this, you know, a lot of folks, a lot of scholars will say the Constitution was written to the fact that nothing was ever supposed to be finalized. You know, but we have enough quote-unquote smart people today, and we're in a different era, that things could be finalized, and we live in a country that we are free, we can make money, but we need to continue to do move forward instead of getting into these, you know, I'm thinking words that I know I can't say in my head, into these war of words with our allies, with our state leaderships, with even our constituency. I mean, when the spin doctor comes on now, you know, you and I talked about this now, Boeing is going to put in a new fleet of Air Force One. That was deal was finalized with the Air Force. And, you know, the president said, you know, oh, we need to change the colors. We need to do this. We need to do that. And remember your response was, what's wrong with the Jackie O?
Right. What's wrong with the current colors of Air Force One?
Right.
I mean, okay, this is definitely a side item. Kind of a little bone on my side. Kind of like the colors as they are now. I mean, it is really distinct. When you see that plane flying in the air over your town, over your city, you can't miss it. You know for sure that is Air Force One. You know that, that's a beautiful plane to see, quite frankly, and we've been blessed to see it up close and personal. And it's quite a color. I personally, you know, I mean, I don't think it should change. I think we should always have a very distinctive plane that no one else can imitate. I mean, you can always do red, white, and blue. You certainly could. You just look like another airline, in my opinion, if you painted Air Force One another way. That color is very distinctive, and when you see it flying, you can't miss it. You cannot miss it. And just me saying that, but that's just a real deep side item from the topic there. But before we go, and I know we got a few minutes left, had to ask this question, Randall. This is a local question, and it also speaks to young people and to our city. Mayor Kenny, what were you thinking when you cut loose Jay-Z and the Made in America thing? You want to talk about a roller coaster ride and a lack of communication, something side item there? I got to believe there must have been a glitch in the bureaucracy. Phone call didn't get made. Lawyer maybe took the letter of the law too tightly. Don't know what happened, but how in the world does – how did that happen when you've got a millennial population in your city that then brings their friends in, 50,000 people at a time for 2 days, and brings something like $100 million to the coffers, and then you just want to cut that loose?
Well, I'm going to play devil's advocate on this one. Remember, this was started 6 years ago by then Mayor Nutter. And the argument was it wasn't enough around September 1st. You know, there was not enough tourism. There was not enough being done in the city. So they came up with this idea, Made in America with Jay-Z. And it continued on. Now, quote unquote, there are those that say that now we're getting the tourism and all of that. And then you have to look at it from a political standpoint. You got 50,000 folks coming into the city of Philadelphia on the heels of a November election, you know, on the heels of a mayor that wants to be reelected, and I'm not saying this is what happened, but you look at it from a standpoint, the folks sitting on the parkway are now saying, you know, we vote for you, or we may not vote for you. So you start weighing your options. And somebody dropped the ball in weighing the options, and there wasn't no real discussion.
Right.
You know, this could have been solved. And now it's almost like what President Trump said when he said, I meant to say should, when he said shouldn't.
Right.
Now it's,
I'm out of the NAFTA agreement entirely.
Right.
Or something
now
like that.
Now it's the mayor of Philadelphia saying, oh, it's not completely off the table when others says it's off the table.
The table. Understanding it was a logistical issue. We understand that. I mean, you closed the parkway about, what, a couple of – you started slowly but surely closing your parkway two, three, four weeks in advance of Made in America. So no one's poo-pooing the logistical nightmare it takes to put that thing on. But once it's put on, a whole lot of people from not from Philadelphia come to that event and watch Rihanna, Nicki Minaj. You pick the name person. Mm-hmm. Never mind the up-and-coming emerging artists that come in that are not all rappers, by the way, and bring you $100 million every year they come in since 2012.
I just think it was a political misstep on someone's part. And, you know, it's almost like, I don't know whether you remember when Maurice Cheeks showed back up at his house down in South Street, and all the TV cameras, everything were out there, and he's wondering why they were out there. And leadership of the Sixers hadn't told him that he had been traded. Mm. He had to find out through the media, the same way Rock Nation and Live Nation, and those folks had to find out. Yet there are folks saying, "Wait a minute, stop, hold the microphone. We sent you. We communicated with you." But obviously, there was a ball dropped, and you're talking about $175 million. But on the other hand, Maurice, when we get to $175 million, where's it going?
Well, you know, that's a topic.
That's a job that we need to have the controller of the city on.
Which she clearly is on.
Break it down, and because we're getting all of these assets into the city of Philadelphia.
Indeed.
But where are they going? How are they accountability? Our schools, our, you know, everything that's up in the air. We need to hold folks accountable.
Indeed. And so we'll try to do that on this show, and we'll try to do our best to bring folks on. And listeners, always feel free to reach out to us and tell us what you'd want to hear and on the show. And this has been one of those days where we just wanted to have a little bit of a barbershop conversation here. We want to appreciate you for taking the time to listen to us here. So on Twitter, we are at Tone and Tenor. To find us on Facebook, just type in www.facebook.com/ToneTenor to find our page. Our studio engineer today was Mr. Brett Cronenberger. Mr. Brett, thank you as per always. I'm Maurice Goodman.
I'm Randall Jefferson.
Thank you for listening to the Tone and Tenor Bipartisan Voices of the People talk show, radio show here on WWDB AM Talk 860.